Who is Jesus Christ? Hello, and welcome to Good Word, a program dedicated to exploring issues of faith and the Bible. This week, our discussion focuses on the Gospel of Luke. Our specific title is actually that leading question I just asked. Who is Jesus Christ? My name is Paul Dibdahl, and I'm joined with two discussion partners, Daryl Bigger, professor in the School of Theology at Walla Walla University, and Pam Kress, a professor in the School of Social Work and Sociology, also at Walla Walla University. I'm grateful to both of you for joining me today. So when we hear that question, who is Jesus Christ? On the one hand, it maybe seems like a really easy answer. Most people, at least in our society, they know who Jesus is, right?
Well, they've heard the name at least, haven't they?
Okay.
Yeah.
If we were to explore the name a little more, what does the name Jesus actually mean?
Well, you're the theologian, Daryl. He's looking at me. But since I have the answer right here in front of me, I'll tell you. It means Joshua, and I was surprised at that because Joshua is a very common name in our culture today. I'm understanding it's the Greek equivalent of the Hebrew.
That's right. Joshua is the Hebrew. Jesus is the Greek equivalent. And both those names mean the same thing.
The Lord saves.
The Lord saves.
Yeah.
A wonderful name. Mm. Jesus is often called Christ also, right? Jesus Christ. Is that a last name or what does Christ mean?
This is the anointed one who has been promised to come throughout the centuries of human history as God's answer to the separation of human beings from him.
Good.
Yeah.
Christ literally means the anointed one, and then you gave us a wonderful description. The Hebrew equivalent, Christ is the Greek, the Hebrew equivalent is another fairly common term that we use frequently, Messiah. So Jesus, Christ, Messiah. Two others that we'll spend just a few moments on and then move into some more questions here. Jesus is also frequently called the Son of God. And the common understanding of that is, well, that means then that he is divine somehow, right? He's the Son of God. God is a divine being, so Jesus must be too. The other title is one that Jesus, it's his favorite title that he uses to describe himself, and that is the Son of Man. And I don't want to go on too long of a monologue here, but I think that term is frequently misunderstood. We tend to see that as, oh, Son of God, emphasizing his divinity, Son of Man, emphasizing his humanity. Actually, I think we need to go to the Old Testament, to the book of Daniel, where we find this same phrase used, Son of Man. And there we discover that the Son of Man is not a lowly title, but it's an exalted title of one who is seated at the right hand of God the Father, whose kingdom will never end, who will come on the clouds with power and great glory. So there's some scholarly debate here, but I think when Jesus uses that title of himself, he's pointing them to something very important about who he is. Having said all of that, here's the question, and I'm going to be quiet, so you better be ready to say something here. How important is it to have like all of these names figured out exactly, and to know theologically who Jesus is? Is that really crucial?
For centuries, Christians have debated those very things. And as a result of those debates, they emphasize the importance of both the divinity and the humanity of Jesus. And without either one of them, it shortchanges the phenomenally comprehensive view of God's salvation of humanity. So I think we need both the divine side of God and the human side of God functioning in Jesus, or we misunderstand the whole plan of salvation and our invitation to participate in life with God now.
Okay. So important. And you gave a convincing response there, yes. Daryl. How well did the disciples of Jesus, the people that Jesus lived among, how well did they understand what you just described?
Yeah.
I don't think they understood well at all. And I think even as someone who is not a theologian, sitting here talking with two theologians, it's still hard for me to grasp. But when you look at the example of Jesus and what he did with his life, especially in those last 3 years of his ministry, it was very much human and divine. You saw him healing. You saw him doing things that were counterculture, which I love, talking to women, loving on children. Those are all human, at least should be human responses, but at the same time, healing someone on the Sabbath day. All of those things, I think, were who he was, and it gets mixed up for me on what's the human part, what's the divine.
Yeah.
Is that important to understand? But I'm not sure people really got it in the day.
So would I be twisting your words to say that both by behavior and by theology, Jesus was both of those things? He did supernatural things and he did perfectly common human things.
Yes.
So whether the disciples comprehended intellectually what it all meant or not, they could get a comprehensive view of who God is and what God's attitude toward us is by the behavior of Jesus or by the theological significance of the name.
Isn't it possible that someone could have the correct theological understanding of who Jesus is, that he's fully God, that he's fully man, and yet that same person not know, I'll say it this way, not really know who Jesus is? Did that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I once had someone tell me that only a theologian would make it to heaven. And my response was, maybe no theologian will be in heaven, which really led me, because I felt disenfranchised, obviously, with the comment, because I don't always understand everything that's in the biblical context. And maybe it's trite to say neither one of us, but it is possible. Maybe it is possible to have a great understanding theologically and really miss the boat somehow.
Well, doesn't Judas's story as one of the inner circle with Jesus illustrate how closely you can be in contact with this Son of God, this Son of Man, and still misunderstand the significance of that?
Well, and I think of, to take it even a step below Judas, I think of the devil himself. I suspect that the devil has a fairly accurate understanding, theologically, we might say, of who Jesus is, and yet great, he's got it down, so good. There's something about, even if you can't explain it, something about being in association with Jesus, in relationship with him, which to me seems more important to Jesus than that someone's able to articulate exactly the theological details of who he is. In Luke 9, this is shifting gears here. In Luke 9, Jesus takes his closest disciples up onto a mountain to pray. Christians typically call this the Mount of Transfiguration. And there, we talked about this just a bit last week. There, while on the mountain, God the Father speaks, and Jesus engages in conversation with Moses and Elijah. It's an astonishing story. It seems kind of odd to me that we've had Gabriel appear before. Why send Moses and Elijah to talk with Jesus? Why not send one of the great angels like Gabriel, for example? Could we reflect for a moment on that?
Well, for me, that is a story about being with people who know what you're going through right now.
Yeah, totally correct. Mm-hmm. I would agree. They had experienced what it meant to struggle as human beings on this earth.
To be rejected by human beings here, to be misunderstood, to be significantly disappointed, to see what looked to them like failure, and look at where they are. So this is the end of the story in the middle of the battle.
I don't remember if I said it leading up to this question, but the Bible actually tells us what they talked about. It says that they spoke about his, in my version of the Bible, it says his departure, which was to take place soon. In the Greek, the original language of the New Testament, the word there is Exodus, which makes that connection, Daryl, I think, even better. To talk with Moses about the Exodus. If you know the Old Testament story, you know that Moses is the one that leads Israel on their Exodus from slavery in Egypt to freedom, to the Promised Land. So I resonate with what you have said, and I think the text pushes us even in that direction. I have all kinds of questions about this. I wonder, what language did they talk? Right. How do they greet each other? I think it's wonderful to just imagine this scene. So Jesus needed encouragement sometimes? Is that what I hear you saying?
Sure.
Yeah, I would think so.
And some illustrations of that come from the crucifixion passage, which we'll get to in several weeks.
Our relationship to Jesus, we tend to think of it in a one way, you know, the way in which my relationship with Jesus benefits me. Maybe sometimes it's valuable for us to think of the way in which our connection or relationship with Jesus, our words to Jesus, can be an encouragement to him, even now. It's kind of a reflective note to end on.
It's good.
But we close once again, and I'm grateful to Pam and Daryl for your willingness to reflect with me today. I'd like to also thank David Olson, our program engineer. Finally, thank you for listening in. I hope that you'll join us again next week. For Good Word, I'm Paul Dibdahl.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.